Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey folks, today's Bob Seska Show is brought to you by our Patreon page. In case you're not aware, we produce four podcasts every damn week. That means a new show every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Now you might be wondering why you don't see the Friday show on Apple Podcasts and wherever the hell you listen to podcasts. That's because our Friday After Party podcast, with all of its revealing discussions about sex, drugs, rock and roll, and politics, is only available through our Patreon page. So please help support this show by subscribing to our Friday After Party podcast for just $10 a month. We're also posting all kinds of free content on our Patreon page, including our Wednesday interview show, people like Eric Bollert, Randy Rhodes, Malcolm Nance, John Fugelsang, Frank Conniff, and Tom Nichols. That's BobSeskaShow.com, or just click the all caps Patreon link beneath the logo at BobSeska.com. And now, let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
This was not written for chiefs.
Hear me.
Hear this! Among my people, we carry many such words as this from many lands, many worlds. Many are equally good and are as well respected. But wherever we have gone, no words have said this thing of importance in quite this way. Look at these three words, written larger than the rest, with a special pride never written before or since. Tall words, proudly saying, "We the people." That which you call Eid Plebnista was not written for the chiefs or the kings or the warriors or the rich or the powerful, but for all the people. Down the centuries, you have slurred the meaning out of the words, "We the people of the United States," in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. To ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution, these words and the words that follow were not written only for the Yangs, but for the Kongs as well.
The Kongs?
They must apply to everyone, or they mean nothing. Do you understand?
I do not fully understand.
Bob Seska!
If you vote for me, all of your wildest dreams will come true.
The Bob Seska Show!
It's the only way to come back from a vacation. Welcomed back by Captain Kirk reading the preamble to the Constitution. I love it so much. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, July 30, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show presented by BubbleGenius.com. It is the greatest damn soap ever. What's up? My name is Bob. Hi.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Day 922 of the Trump crisis, day 85 of the constitutional crisis, 462 days into the 2020 presidential election. I'm back from vacation. And Buzz is sitting right there. Hey, Buzz.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody. It's great to have you back. By the way, about William Shatner, he recently said in an interview that he does not hear the affectation in his delivery. He does not.
He even says, in that clip, he even says, he doesn't say the word people. He says people. He says people, yeah. Among my people.
Oh, but my favorite was tranquility.
Tranquility.
Which he pronounced tranquility. Tranquility.
You gotta love the show.
I missed you. I missed doing the show with you.
Missed you too.
Thinking about, we go together like Marlon Brando and Richard Pryor. I think
a little bit.
Yeah, maybe too much. I don't know.
I know, we're holding
but
hands.
I have had it, Bob. Yeah. Don't you think it's time for Baltimore to go back where it came from?
God damn it, Baltimore. Go back to wherever you came from with your silly accent.
Who's with me? It's not easy being a rat in Baltimore because you're living in the shadow of the rats in D.C.
That's true.
Hey, here's the thought. What do you say we skip the impeachment and go straight for the tar and feathers? What do you
think? That's perfect. Best idea I heard all week. There you go.
I'm actually a little, in spite of the good news, we have good news to talk about today. And,
yeah.
And in spite of that, I'm a little down about tonight's Democratic debate. I mean, as far as I can tell, this will be the last time we'll ever hear from Marianne Williamson.
Thank God. Her and Andrew Yang. Get away from serious people. Thank you.
Yeah, and Tim Ryan and John Delaney and Steve Bullock and John Hickenlooper. And maybe Amy Klobuchar, which there goes the dream ticket of Klobuchar Hickenlooper with a 3-foot-long bumper sticker. That's out now.
That's true.
But I'll end with this. My last observation before we start talking about the events of the day. I see in the news Capital One changing its credit card slogan to "Who's in your wallet?"
Is that true?
Not true. Yeah. That's where the rim shot goes. You silly man.
Okay. All right. Thank you, my friend. Hey, I am, like I said, I'm back from the break. Did anything important happen? I think a few things. You know what? So many important things actually did happen, Buzz, that your monologue jokes there reminded me that there's a debate tonight, and I completely forgot about the Democratic debate.
It's hard to stay on top of what just happened as opposed to anything that might be happening.
Yeah. I mean, I spent had a good week. I had a good vacation. It was relaxing. Good. I feel recharged. So. I don't feel as suicidal as I did leading up to the vacation.
I didn't take the week off, and I don't feel as suicidal either. And this is great news for our listeners. I think they're already cheered up too, I think. Mm-hmm. But I know that you and I are, not just because of your time off for your benefit, but for both our benefits and the benefit of the people listening, closer than ever to impeachment. The word is out there now more than ever. It's a serious thing now. It's a very real possibility. In any event, a lot's happening. If you'll recall, was it 6 months ago or whatever I said on the show, we doesn't has to call it impeachment. We can call it anything we want to as long as we do it. Well, it appears to be seriously underway, and this could be a very exciting week still ahead.
Now, what are the new powers that people like Chairman Nadler are going to receive now that there's an impeachment inquiry underway? Because now, what, they're able to get more documents through the courts. The courts are going to be a little more lenient because of the existence of an impeachment proceeding. Is that what I understand? Or how does this help the Democrats specifically?
I don't know.
wait.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
I just had to throw in a late rim shot on that one.
No, I wish I did know more about this, but I've read aplenty that Congress does have more powers. And yes, specifically in terms of being able to get compliance, to get documents.
Yeah.
Congress has a constitutional oversight responsibility, and it has to be able to get this stuff. And particularly these, it's like taking a power pill. as far as investigating the president goes. Like I said, I don't know all the details, the ins and outs of it, but I know that Congress can get more stuff now that they haven't been able to get from this stonewalling administration. It is like a power pill.
And I think that's the best way to describe it. I think that's the point of starting this, is that now Nadler, Schiff, Cummings, all these guys, Chairman Neal, they can all get their hands on these documents that they wouldn't have otherwise been able to get. The grand jury testimony, they can now get those transcripts through the courts. Obviously, there'll be some sort of attempt, I assume, by Bill Barr and Donald Trump to block the receipt of those documents. But, I mean, that's all kind of technical process shit. I mean, the fact of the matter is...
And delay. It's delay.
But the fact of the matter is, the important thing is that this is now underway. We are now headed at breakneck speed toward an actual impeachment vote. And I can't see the actual vote eventually being blocked. I see this going straight on through to a vote on the floor of the House to impeach Donald Trump. And, of course, I have to give a hats off. I have to give a round of applause, too. To all of our listeners, especially, who were keeping the faith with Nancy Pelosi and saying, look, and I'm looking directly at you, Jason Broska, guys like that. A lot of our Patreon supporters, too, were like, you know what? Hang on. Nancy Pelosi's got this. Don't worry about it.
We were hoping, but we just couldn't see it. You know, that's what, and I think I said that on Twitter at some point, responding to somebody, is, you know, it may be that Pelosi is absolutely right. This was before, we heard about the court papers that used the word impeachment like 67 times before that happened. I was saying of Pelosi, I think she's, there's a good chance she's doing the right thing. I just can't see it from here. Yeah. Well, guess what? I mean, I was pretty down. I was very close to throwing in the towel at the end of last week.
Yeah,
seriously was, because I saw the support of Trump and I saw nothing going anywhere until those court papers came down, until Jerry Nadler spoke the word impeachment.
Yeah.
Until those things happened, I just didn't see any way out of this, which made it all seem pretty pointless. I had sort of reached that point. I said, I'll give it till Tuesday. If things don't, well, boom, the very next day, out come those court papers, the court filing, the lawsuit that was filed with so many references to impeachment and Nadler using the word. And now I've read some behind the scenes stuff about what Pelosi has been saying, which is really she's not pushing this publicly, but she's completely let it go privately. She's told House lawmakers, as long as they don't attack each other and as long as they don't make it all about impeachment, then they may say about impeachment whatever they please.
That's
and
right.
That's a first. She too has said that he has committed impeachable offenses. So more than ever, she seems very open to the idea. And we knew this day would come, as we have now reached almost half of the Democrats in the House calling for impeachment.
Yeah, what are we at? 107 House Democrats?
Oh, no. Ding, 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 ding. It's up to 110?
Oh. 110 now. Oh, wait. I pressed the wrong button. There we go.
I think we can laugh, a mocking, victorious laugh.
I just came back from vacation. My fingers don't know where the hell the buttons are anymore.
Maybe they do. Maybe it's like a Ouija thing. Your hands automatically goes to the right sound. I liked it. I thought it was inappropriately mawkish.
Let's see. Let me see if I can still find some things here.
Trump is a fucking idiot.
There's that. How about this?
Trump is crazy.
There's that. There's Jody's noise. The confused.
Here's the important one.
Attorney General Bill Barr. There's that. That works. Okay. I think we're all set here. You're exactly right. And the main thing that I'm taking away from this process, and one of the things that I was concerned about prior to this actually all transpiring last week with the impeachment, is I was concerned that Nancy Pelosi simply was drawing a line in the sand that she was not going to allow the House of Representatives to cross. And that was deeply concerning to me. But now that we have, I guess patience should pay off. I need to learn all of my Obi-Wan Kenobi lessons. I need to be patient. I need to wait.
Patience.
That's true. Screw patience. I know. I mean, but it's hard. It's challenging when you see the entire deal falling apart every day and you go, where are the gatekeepers? Where are the people who are supposed to be putting a stop to this? We learned all these years that you cannot behave like this as president of the United States, even as a candidate for higher office. You can't act like this. And where are the people to actually proceed with those repercussions? And I wasn't seeing that. Yeah. And, but
where's
now,
the fire department?
Yeah, exactly. And now I see this moving forward. We now have all of these Democrats lining up, more than half, 12, at least 12 since Mueller's testimony last week. We still need to get Adam Schiff. Someone needs to, I think that Rachel Maddow needs to grab Adam Schiff by the lapels and go, what are you thinking, man? My God.
Here's my theory about Adam Schiff. When we first heard.
By the way, that was that, my Rachel Maddow impression right there.
Okay.
We first heard, yes.
I don't even remember now.
When we first heard, I think you were going to say when we first heard that there was an impeachment inquiry underway. Is that what you were going to say?
No, that wasn't it. We'll move on. We'll come back to it.
Shit,
it's
sorry.
It's going to be fine. Nah, it's going to be fine. Don't even edit this out.
Well, so I guess that takes us right into Mueller's testimony last week, which is, I think, maybe the first or second biggest story of the past week or 10 days or so. The other one being Russia invading all 50 states. We'll get to that in a second. Mueller's testimony last week. There were so many things to rejoice about. There were so many things to be irritated about. The irritating things had little to do with Robert Mueller himself, had everything to do with guys like Chuck Todd.
Fuck you!
Who seemed to think that somehow impeachment hung in the balance based on whether or not Robert Mueller could be this dynamic, garish Broadway-style performer in front of the dais in the House Intelligence and Judiciary Committees. And of course, that was never going to happen.
No, I invested some time in telling people to lower their expectations for Mueller's testimony. There was only one thing we needed him to do, and he did it, and that was to help get said what's in the report that no one has read, including members of Congress, still. And it was so important then to get him to say that. And he said some very important things. I think the upshot of my summary of his testimony last week was that for all the 200 questions, the nearly 200 questions that he didn't answer, for all the references to other sources and that sort of thing that he did, failing to answer so many questions, he did answer many with some very powerful, undeniably powerful answers that did two things: that confirmed what was in the report, which is what we needed him there for, and also he brought new things to the table that had not been revealed in his report, thoughts that were not included in his report. And it really, I thought, augmented the report. Yeah, I can see why some people were disappointed. But if they were, they were looking at the wrong thing.
I mean, one of the things that I didn't expect, going back to what you were just saying with regard to things that we didn't expect Trump Mueller to say, not Trump. We expect everything to come out of Trump's mouth. But in terms of Mueller, the thing that I was most pleased and shocked to hear was Robert Mueller saying that Donald Trump was unpatriotic for asking for Russia's help in the election. And that, I mean, I had been waiting for something like that and waiting and waiting and waiting. In fact, you could actually say I've been waiting for something like that going back to the days after 9/11, when all you had to do was give George W. Bush the skunk eye and you were immediately labeled as unpatriotic, as un-American, you're with the terrorists and all the rest of it. It's about damn time someone from a place of authority actually labeled some of these cowards and crooks unpatriotic for their actions. And that's exactly what Robert Mueller did to Donald Trump in that hearing. I mean, he confirmed. And it was in the form of these great kind of yes and no answers, like especially at the beginning of the Intelligence Committee portion of the hearings with Adam Schiff doing the quick rapid fire, almost lightning round right at the start with did this happen? Yes. Did that happen? No. Did this other thing happen? Yes. And that was a great bit of encapsulation where you didn't need Robert Mueller to necessarily elaborate on every individual thing. But to have that soundbite size back and forth, the ping pong of that, was, I thought, was really, really compelling, because you were able to get a lot of information into a very short span of time. And I think that's also where the unpatriotic thing came out.
I'll get right back on track here, but you triggered my memory as to the point that I lost earlier, which is I'm glad we're getting back to this. When we first heard from Jerry Nadler from behind the scenes that he was interested in impeachment, we also heard it from Adam Schiff. I think Adam Schiff has been in favor of impeachment. I know this is going back a point, but I believe he's been in favor of impeachment for some time, but fearful to speak because of Pelosi. I think he will speak soon enough. I think Schiff is very married to the idea of trying to seem like an impartial prosecutor.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what that's about. But back to your point about Mueller, he had some shaky points, but it was what he did say, as opposed to the questions he didn't answer. He said so much, including the charge about not being patriotic, finding that WikiLeaks endorsement by Donald Trump, Mueller calling that an understatement as far as being problematic is concerned.
Yeah.
He clarified that he didn't clear Trump of collusion because he did not address collusion. He confirmed that he did not clear Trump of obstruction. And gave reason for continued investigation of that. There was so much that he poured out in that report.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things he went after Don Jr., he's found Don Jr.'s interactions with WikiLeaks to be disturbing, subject to investigation. I guess that's still maybe an open question, the relationship between Don Jr. and WikiLeaks.
Yeah, there's more to be revealed there. And as Mueller said in the hearing, he said, go ask the FBI this question.
Yeah.
And that's right. And this, to me, the high point of the hearing, I jumped up and cheered a little bit when this happened. because I know no one else did, but I really seized upon this moment. It was the moment that, without using the I word himself, Mueller agreed that impeachment is one of the constitutional processes that he referred to in his report as the only way to prosecute a sitting president. In other words, in his own very weird way, Mueller did recommend impeachment by Congress.
And here's one of the things that I think we haven't quite crystallized yet when discussing impeachment. I think we've kind of encroached on that territory a little bit, but the thing that I've been thinking about a lot over the last 7 or 8 days is that I'm kind of relieved to see the Democrats taking a long view approach. And I think it's important to set a precedent, or to continuously reinforce the precedent, that if the chief executive violates the law, that we're going to hold him accountable in violation of, because of the violation of that law. And so that is keeping an eye on history, and in this case, future history, so that if it happens again, there is precedent for this sort of thing, rather than saying, hey, let's take a short-term view of all of this, and let's worry about the weird House districts in Wisconsin that flipped from Obama to Trump. Instead of worrying about the near, what's going to happen to some of these House districts in a couple of years, the fact is that they're now taking this what I believe is a more responsible approach in all of this, rather than the short-term political downside of impeachment, rather than focusing more on that. You know, I saw a clip, I forget, I think it was on Chris Hayes' show with Rob Reiner, and then there was this Democratic congressman, I think, I want to say from Wisconsin, I'm not entirely sure. All I could remember from this guy was he was wearing basically what looked like a zoot suit. It was like a pinstripe zoot suit from 1942 or something like that. And this guy was whining and whining, we can't do impeachment because I barely won re-election in 2016 and now, or 2018, now I'm up again, and you're jeopardizing my political future by doing this. Well, you know what? If a couple of members of the House get sacrificed in this process, I hate to say it because I know we need every vote, but so be it. I mean, granted.
Well, I know. Do we want a Republican in there instead? I do think they should shut up and stop whining. Yeah. I think that they should run in their district the kind of campaign that will succeed in their district. If they don't want to talk about impeachment, they don't have to.
Yeah.
If they want to focus on kitchen table issues, they should, by all means. I believe all candidates in both parties for any office should be talking about those issues.
Yeah.
But I don't wish for their destruction. And I would miss them a bit if they were gone. I don't think they're going to be a problem. If they stay out of our way and go do their thing in their district, we'll be fine.
You know, I want to talk now a little bit about Chuck Todd's reaction. And I hate to single out Chuck Todd alone.
Because
there were others who were like this. But Chuck Todd was one of the most egregious offenders on that day, on the day of the Mueller testimony.
Yes.
I believe it was Wednesday. Where he jumped out and said, you know what? This is a disaster for the Democrats. And I could have, if I had been around, I might have predicted a response like that from Chuck Todd, because, of course, everything. I mean, in fact, there's a meme that goes back, I don't know, 10 years. Remember the 2008 election? There was a meme going around the blogs and social media at the time where everyone said, you know, whatever news that came out, we always said, oh, that's good news for John McCain. That was the meme. That was sort of the zinger right. that we had at the time, because the way the cable news press behaved toward every news event that had at least something in some way tangentially to do with the election, always good news for John McCain, always bad news for the Democrats. That is
how'd that work out, by the way?
I know. I mean, that is the script that they wheel out especially every single election year. But in terms of what happened last Wednesday with this testimony, Chuck Todd jumped out right away with that scripted bullshit that they use every single time. Everything that happens, bad news for Democrats. And somehow
Chuck was not alone.
Yeah.
He was not alone. You know, even the New York Times and the Washington Post and other papers, other outlets, other analysts were saying, well, that's it. It's over. They tried. No good. And again, they were just looking at it in the wrong way and doing some damage with those assessments. Certainly, but it was simply a matter of looking at it the wrong way, and that's what they, not only is that what they were doing, they were proven wrong inside of what, 48 hours?
Yeah, because it didn't turn out to be a disaster for the Democrats.
No.
I mean, I mean, certainly it may have been more compelling television for cable news if Robert Mueller had come out with guns blazing like Yosemite Sam with, you know, an effigy of Donald Trump on fire or something like that.
And in the Trump era of reality TV government, that's what the audience wanted.
Yeah.
Democrats would have, I understand the disappointment of some Democrats who were hoping for more, maybe not Yosemite Sam, but maybe a little more than what we saw that day. I know I certainly wish for more than what we saw that. But when I look at the content of that, we did very, very well in terms of getting the truth out there. And getting some things out of Mueller. You know, he said, this was my theme of last week's report, summing up the Mueller testimony. One of the headlines that I wanted to use for the newscast but did not is, he said the things he said he would not say. Because he said that he would go outside of the report, and yet he did.
Yep.
On multiple occasions in multiple ways, clarifying and emphasizing and adding to what we had already learned.
Yeah.
So I was not disappointed. I left the store with things in my basket. I came away with something from that.
Well put.
I don't know where that comes from. But I did come away with something from that, and so I felt good about that, and I was disappointed and a little angry also about the assessments. Oh well, we're screwed. Mueller didn't come out and dance, but this is the age we're living in, and overall as a population, and face it, we have to win the whole as much of the population as we can in this age of Donald Trump reality show. The carnival barker show business, it's hard for what's normal to stand out.
Well, the problem was that Robert Mueller was showing his age. And that was kind of part of it. But the fact is that Donald Trump himself shows his age all the time. I mean, this past week, he said something like, what did he say? Bar partisan? He was delivering some speech yesterday. I think it was his remarks prior to signing the 9/11 victims compensation bill, which he took all the credit for. It didn't even invite the Democratic author of the bill to the White House to participate in the signing of the bill.
No, but Bob, he spent a lot of time down there. He says he spent. I was down there also. I spent a lot of time down there with you. He said.
And then last week he said infantroopen. I don't know what the hell infantroopen is, otherwise sounding like a Nazi word for infantry. Oh. I mean, that's what that sounded like. But everything from what he was saying, infantroopen. He said oranges of the investigation that one time. He couldn't say anonymous over and over again. He just couldn't say it. Couldn't say the words. The entire Jerusalem speech. My God, where was Chuck Todd about the optics on the Jerusalem speech where it seemed like Donald Trump was stroking out? I mean, there have been numerous occasions like that. You know, he once referred to Ulysses S. Grant as Ulysses S. Grant.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
But I mean, Nambia, all the rest of it. Donald Trump has these fuck-ups all the goddamn time. Where is Chuck Todd and the optics police every time the president of the United States does that over and over again? Where it's, I mean, literally, that I keep going back to that Jerusalem speech was an absolute disaster. That was the God bless the United States. That thing? I mean, my God. And you know, so these guys have the nerve to go after Robert Mueller. But I will say this with regard to Mueller's actual performance. It did confirm for me something that I had suspected for some time now. And I'm not sure if I actually brought this up on the show. I might have said something with Sarah Kendzior on the show not too long ago. But I was suspecting for a while that perhaps one of the reasons why we hadn't heard from Robert Mueller to coincide with the release of the report, or certainly after Bill Barr bastardized it with his memo back in March, was possibly because he had kind of maybe some sort of physical ailment that he was being shielded from the public because of. And so this kind of led me to believe that maybe that was kind of the case, where I think he may have taken on more of a figurehead role in some of this, where who's his deputy? Aaron Zebley. I think Aaron Zebley was kind of running the show, running the special counsel's office for a good long time, running the day-to-day operations, whereas Robert Mueller was more of a supervisor and overall.
Yeah, he was less in touch than we thought or hoped.
Yeah, yeah. And so that may have explained why Aaron Zebley had to sit next to Robert Mueller and help him out during the actual testimony, and why some of his other prosecutors were sitting behind him. Certainly answers the question why we hadn't heard Robert Mueller in press conference situations. On top of the fact that Robert Mueller wanted his investigation to be of the highest integrity. And I think that's obviously the real explanation for why we didn't get a whole lot of press conferences, the whole dog and pony show that Ken Starr put on during the
that's the real reason.
Yeah. But I mean, there's something to be said there about, you know, Robert Mueller not being the same Robert Mueller that everyone remembers from 10 years ago or whatever it was. But I mean, ultimately, it doesn't matter because he was still had the wherewithal to confirm huge sections of that report, to reiterate parts of it. And then, as you were saying, Buzz, toward the end, Robert Mueller was, in fact, expanding beyond the four corners of the report and actually delivering some opinions about what he thought of certain things. And it was at the very end, I think, of the Intelligence Committee portion of the hearings, where I think he just was feeling a little bit comfortable. I think at that point started to let his hair down, so to speak, and was able to say a few things that were revealing and interesting and beyond what we were expecting him to say. So I think ultimately you have to put this in the win category because it's now gotten us to
absolutely
an impeachment inquiry. We now have sound bites that the news can play of Robert Mueller and his integrity and his level of authority, confirming all of this shit that we've been talking about for 2.5 years now. And it's all upside at this point.
Yeah, it's been an agonizing journey. Even these last few Democratic nods for impeachment that we've seen this last dozen that have come in since Mueller testified, for example.
Mm-hmm.
This was hard fought, you know, and this was another situation where we thought Mueller's going to be great. And then the vast majority, if not all, of the Democrats in Congress will be on board for impeachment. And once again, we were sort of disappointed that it didn't go that far. We're encouraged. I mean, I think we're I feel more confident about going forward than I've felt before because we are almost a half. The good news is we're almost a half in the House of Democrats favoring impeachment. The bad news is we're almost a half in the House of Democrats favoring impeachment. So it's the glass is half full. The glass is half empty at the same time. And but the trend is good. The trend is encouraging. And it just seems like it's more out there now than it's ever been before. And I don't think you can put that genie back in the bottle.
Well, now we're going to see behind the scenes a lot of wheeling and dealing. We're going to see Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi busily finding out who they can, whose arm they can twist, who they can cut a deal with to get them on board too. Because now it becomes the thing that Nancy Pelosi is really, really good at, and that is building a coalition. Yeah, sure. Putting together all the votes, making sure the entire caucus is voting as one.
Yes, crushing the opposition.
Crushing the opposition, yes. That's right.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I want to get into Russia here in a second. Russia, we have confirmation from the Republican-controlled Senate Intelligence Committee that Russia successfully invaded 50 goddamn states, and we're able to get into election systems in all 50 states, expanding this as we drip, drip, drip closer and closer to finding out that, oh, yeah, they really did fuck with the outcome of the election. Yeah, how about that?
What could possibly go wrong?
I know. So before we get into that, I want to talk about Plexiderm, Buzz. I don't know if you've tried Plexiderm yet, Buzz, but oh my God, this is...
I have not, but Randy Rhodes is using it because she premieres her show, premieres on Free Speech TV. About the time, a little before the show's being released, about the same time this show's being released.
Yeah.
And she said she was using Plexiderm because she was worried about going on high def TV.
And that's a great excuse to use it. If you're also going on high def TV, I mean, now everyone's got a high def television camera in their pockets, for God's sake.
Doesn't everybody get a high def TV show? Because if you do, if you're one of the lucky few, then you need Plexiderm.
And you know, the greatest thing about it, Buzz, is Kimberly and I have both tried it. And the thing that blows me away is a lot of these things that you hear about, skincare treatments and so on, they take months and months to work. Like there's one that's out there. Yeah, exactly. There's one out there that they claim will take care of, you know, dark spots and things like that, discoloration, sun damage on your skin.
Soaking doesn't help.
It doesn't help. But what you have to do, you have to wait for, I don't know, 6-9 months to maybe possibly see results. With Plexiderm. We're talking about a matter of minutes with Plexiderm. Wow. You put it on your skin where you've got fine lines, wrinkles, eye bags, and so on. You put on the Plexiderm, and they disappear literally as you're standing there looking at yourself in the mirror. And, you know, I'm not talking about days or weeks to work. Again, Plexiderm is clinically studied to visibly eliminate under eye bags and wrinkles in just a few minutes. The science behind Plexiderm is incredible, with clinical studies to back it up. If you look older and tired because of crow's feet, wrinkles, under eye bags, is it crow's feet or crow's? I keep saying feet. Crow's feet.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, crow's feet. No S.
Yeah, crow's feet doesn't make any goddamn sense. But you can look younger in just minutes with Plexiderm. See for yourself. Give it a try yourself. Take the experiment. Take the plunge. Watch a real video with real people and see how fast those crow's feet, wrinkles, and under eye bags disappear. Those results are backed up by Plexiderm's 30-day satisfaction guarantee. Go to tryplexiderm.com and use the coupon code SEXYLIBERAL. That's two words, all caps, SEXYLIBERAL, for our discount. That's tryplexiderm.com with the code SEXYLIBERAL. You can't miss it. Or call 1-800-685-1292 and mention SEXYLIBERAL. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much.
The Bob Seska Show.
The Bob Seska Show.
All right, here we are. This is Alex and Megan McDuffie on the show again from their Hero album, a song called Avenger. I'm playing this because I watched Marvel movies all week last week. Just sat on the couch, just watched, I don't know, I must have seen a dozen Marvel movies. Some of them I hadn't seen yet. A lot of them I've seen many, many times. And then, you know what else I watched is the new Karate Kid series from YouTube Red called Cobra Kai. It is, Buzz, it is really, really great.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's a lot of cheese. It's a love letter to the 1980s in a certain way.
I like cheese. I like the 80s. I love the 80s. 80s were very good to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I feel weird watching it because I get cynical about these things sometimes. Like, oh, okay, it's a cynical cash grab. They're just renewing this thing. They're rebooting this thing that everyone loves from the 80s and going, oh, hey, look, it's Daniel LaRusso, and oh, hey, look, he's at the grave of Mr. Miyagi, and oh, look, there's Johnny Lawrence, played by William Zabka. But it's actually much more than that. It's really, really great. Really, really great show, and I'm so glad I was able to discover that and watch I think I watched the entire first season. Really excellent. So,
by the way, don't you think you and I have a future in infomercials?
I think we do.
I was listening to the last spot we did, and I think we're good.
Yeah, wake up and smell the Ronco hair paint. I'm lined up. I'm ready to go. I've got the balding starting, so I can.
And about the music, you have a new. It's time. It's due. You have a new music show coming up this weekend.
Yes. Thank you. Another yes. thing that I
just
was
about. Gonna... You're just about finished with it, right?
I totally forgot. I had no idea.
This is why I'm here to remind you.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan, and I think a lot of other people are big fans too.
Yeah,
we really enjoy your monthly music program in which you play all the songs that you play in and out of the commercials on all your other shows.
Yes, yes, all of us.
And by the way, what do you have against Mondays? Why don't you do a Monday show?
Well, Buzz.
If anything, I worry that you work too much, so I'm just giving you a hard
yes.
time.
Really, really difficult to sit here for 90 minutes and talk into a microphone in my underwear. That's tough. Tough, tough gig. Okay, so Russia invaded all 50 states, and we are now getting closer and closer to the thing that we've been talking about since November 9th, 2016, which is... Oh, yeah, Russia fucked with this election. There's no doubt about that. I mean, it's only a matter of time now before we hear that they were able to change votes. But you know what? They didn't have to change votes. That was completely the actual idea that Russia had to change votes to influence the election is bullshit. I think it's a red herring. I think we don't even need to look at it necessarily, although it'd be great to find out whether or not that actually happened.
You've pointed out many times, if they get into the registration rolls, which they did,
yes.
they can easily eliminate voters, and that by default eliminates votes. So they can't affect the vote that way. I think the concern is far greater that they will be changing votes again more through social media than through actual interference.
Yeah.
It's also a way of saying, hey, while you weren't home, we found out you have a really nice house inside. it's that sort of thing. I'll say this as calmly as I can. A hostile foreign government that seeks the destruction of Western democracy invaded the voting systems of all 50 of these United States.
Yep.
I hope I'm not alone here in saying, shouldn't we respond to that somehow, defensively and perhaps offensively as
yeah.
well? And I know there are little efforts here and there, and those encourage me greatly. I know I'm thankful. I never thought I'd say this. Thankful for the efforts of the Pentagon in this area, because so far they seem to be the only ones doing anything about this. And what little they have done very effectively and in very timely fashions.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful for that. But I don't understand why nearly half the country... Why it hasn't soaked in that we've been invaded by Russia and that we've been attacked by Russia. That doesn't get a rise out of you? I don't understand what's wrong with those people.
You know, had this been the days, you know what? I made this point many, many times now that I think about it. Imagine in the days after 9/11, if Senate Majority Leader, Democratic Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle decided, hey, you know what? I'm not going to bring the AUMF to a vote in the Senate. I'm not going to bring the Patriot Act to a vote in the Senate either. I'm just going to let this just wither on the vine. Why do we need any protection from terrorism right now? I mean, can you imagine if that had been the line from Democratic leadership after 9/11? Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, we
do live in this altered reality now.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We're in the process of being attacked. It is happening now. And again,
still, and in the future and in the immediate past.
Yeah, and we can just recycle this for the American public. This is just, it's crickets chirping. My God. I shouldn't just blame the American public, because a lot of this has to do with the Republican Party, which is taking every opportunity to make sure that we continue to be vulnerable to Russian invasion. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Mitch McConnell blocked not one, but two votes last week on election security.
Four, if you want to count that one of the votes was for a package of three bills. So he really voted down, really blocked four measures for improving election security, including paper ballots.
Right.
Because that would help the Democrats, he said.
Right.
Well, you know, because as you and I have discussed before, the Republicans need this sort of thing because they cannot win on the issues.
Mm-hmm.
A majority of Americans do not agree with their views.
Yeah.
And so this sort of cheating is the only method they know of winning.
Yeah, so they have to control the system. I mean, we've got, were saying, a series of bills have been blocked over the past couple of weeks. A Democratic bill passed in the House that would direct $600 million in election assistance to states and require, as you said, backup paper ballots. There was another bipartisan bill, by the way, requiring Facebook, Google, other internet companies to disclose purchases of political ads to identify foreign influence. Another bill. So it's like I said, there were two bills blocked last week, and you said four. I'm going to one up that. We're going to go up to, what do we got here? Eight different bills blocked.
Well, altogether, this was just in a 24-hour period.
Yeah.
In the 24 hours after Mueller testified, Mitch blocked four of such security bills. But yes, his history is, as you're illuminating here, much deeper and longer than that.
He blocked a bipartisan bill imposing sanctions on any entity that attacks a U.S. election. He opposed this, and then he gets up in front of the entire Senate yesterday, Buzz, and starts whining because Joe Scarborough calls him Moscow Mitch, which is, I think, the greatest nickname.
I will not be intimidated. That's a direct reference to being called Moscow Mitch, which I love, and I think, you know, spread it far and wide, say it and post it as often as you can. write it. If you're a student, write it on the chalkboard or the whiteboard at school.
Yeah,
Just put it everywhere, Moscow Mitch, because it's gotten to him.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep it up because it's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
Well, and in fact, here's Mitch McConnell on the floor. I'm sorry,
good.
Moscow Mitch, yesterday on the floor of the Senate talking about this new nickname.
Listen to
there he is. See? Oh, wait a minute.
Whining.
No. Yeah. No, this is actually the sound of a turtle humping a croc. It's not Mitch McConnell. Sorry, wrong clip. All of these pieces of legislation blocked by Mitch McConnell, and then he whines. He said, "Well, it's these are partisan bills."
Yes.
Yeah, welcome to the United States Congress, Mr. Leader. I mean, my God, every single piece of legislation that's proposed in Congress is in some level a partisan political piece of legislation. And that's just the way things work. But of course, he's playing to the idiots and rubes in his caucus, and that's all he needs to say for them to go, "Oh yeah, that's exactly right. It's totally a Democratic ploy." Yeah, where tell me, how is this a partisan piece of legislation to protect all elections? Not to protect elections where Democrats are leading in the polls. This is to protect all elections from interference. And so the only thing I can imagine at this point is that the Republicans believe that this is never going to happen to them, that they have somehow immunized themselves from foreign attack against them.
No. You know what? I think it's more basically political than that. This is about protecting Trump, who protects their interests. The problem is that Mitch has accepted a lot of campaign donations from the four biggest makers of voting machines in America.
Yeah.
So, and these are companies that don't use paper ballots in their work. So naturally, this is the stand Mitch takes. He also doesn't want election reform because he wants Trump to win re-election. And he thinks if we protect U.S. elections, Trump won't get elected again.
Yeah.
And if that happens, then he won't get to pursue more tax cuts for the rich and be cruel to more immigrants and all the other things that Republicans seem to enjoy doing. So to protect the agenda, to protect his campaign donations and donors, Mitch McConnell isn't going to budge, at least not until he's pressured into it. And I think if we keep up the Moscow Mitch thing, I know Democrats in Congress plan to do the same thing.
Yeah.
The plan in the House among Democrats there is to go after Mitch and just give him the hardest possible time they can. And I was just writing today and reading that should a Democrat be elected president in 2020 and should the House, of course it will, I believe, remain Democratic solidly, we don't know if we're going to win the Senate or not.
Yeah,
that could go either way. And if Mitch is still running the Senate, he has already said, I'm your doomsday guy. I'm not going to let anything pass. I forgot the term he used.
Yeah.
But he's going to block everything.
Right.
That comes from the Democratic House.
Which is totally not partisan at all, right?
which is why all the Democratic presidents, candidates for president, are saying they will use executive powers and emergency orders to go around Mitch McConnell in the event that happens. But there's also the possibility Democrats could win the Senate. It's a tough go, but it's possible.
You know, it's I don't know if this means anything, Buzz, but I wrote about all of this for Salon this week. It's out now. I think it's at the top of the page at salon.com. And the shocking thing is that usually when I write something at Salon, I scroll down to the comments and my hair turns white. I mean, the comments are just where facts and reality go to die because it's an open comment forum. Anyone can comment. You don't have to register. It's like Huffington Post or Yahoo News in the old days, those of you who remember, where it was just a wild, wild west. And I can scroll through the comments under any single one of my articles and find dozens and dozens of Trump trolls just flooding the comments. And you know what? Not a single goddamn one so far. There is not, and there are a lot of comments under this piece today, but very few, if any, are in opposition to what I had to say in this article. And so I think people are beginning to realize, or at the very least, the Trump trolls are beginning to realize that this is a losing proposition for them. I mean, how do you make a case other than to say, Russia, you conspiracy theorist, tinfoil hat people? Other than saying that, I mean, there's nothing else they can possibly used to justify not acting to secure our elections, for God's sake. And I think the reality maybe is setting in that, again, this could happen to them next time. There is no template for who Russia or any other country decides to attack now. We better believe that there are going to be numerous other countries that are going to, you know, sort of do knockoff attacks using and borrowing Russia's strategy. But the fact is that any one of those countries, including Russia, could flip the script and decide to see if they can elect a whole bunch of Democrats this time. And so it seems to me as if it's a no-brainer, even if you're the reddest of red hats, to support legislation to secure the elections, because it could happen to anyone. And I guess there's some level of protectionism. Oh yeah, we got to protect our cult leader, our orange clown dictator in the White House, and we got to do all those things to make sure that we're owning the libs and whatnot. But at the same time, you got to be looking at these facts and going, you got to be looking at Mitch McConnell's in action and going, what are you doing? We're working so hard to rig the elections in our favor by using voter ID and gerrymandering and voter suppression and all the rest of it. Why are you jeopardizing it by allowing Saudi Arabia or North Korea or Iran or any of these other countries, Russia, to come in and interfere with our elections on behalf of the Democrats? It seems foolish.
We heard simultaneously last week, first from Mueller and then from the Senate Intelligence Committee report, the bipartisan report that you mentioned from the Republican-led Senate Intelligence Committee. And both Mueller and the committee warned us that, as you just said, it wasn't just Russia. It's other countries, too, already developed this technology. The Senate Intelligence Committee report goes into a great deal of detail on this and talks about the fact that Iran, while not as sophisticated as Russia, has all the same tools and abilities that Russia has. And unlike Russia, Iran is anti-Trump. So now you have two outside countries. These are the two big ones. There are China, we have also, and about a handful, five or six other countries dabbling in this.
Oh, yeah, I almost forgot about China.
China.
Yeah. Yeah, right. But in the meantime, we have Russia and Iran. And what's funny but not funny is that Russia is backing Trump and Iran is opposing Trump and supporting Democrats, Iran is now putting fake Democrats online the way Russia put fake Republicans online. And so and then, wait, there's more. You add to this a couple of weeks ago, the recent summit at the White House where Trump had all his little troll buddies up to the White House to plot their plan for the 2020 election. It's true.
Yeah.
Internet troublemakers he had up in the White House to plot their strategy for 2020. So now we've got Trump's people, Republicans interfering, putting disinformation on social media. We've got the Russians doing it. We've got Iran doing it. And we've got a half dozen other countries either starting it or poised to do it. This is just a mess.
It really, really is. And obviously Congress, or at least I should say the Republicans, intend to do nothing about it until something happens to damage their prospects at the ballot box. And the fact is that once that happens, then we're into scarier territory where they start to go, oh, see, the Democrats colluded with Russia to make us lose in these districts that were safe for us mysteriously. And you got to go, my God, you idiots, you blazing freaking idiots. You had a chance. You had a chance to protect our elections and you refused to act just because you want to own the libs. And now you're getting screwed by your own dildos. I mean, that's
Democrats, on the other hand, including a number of Democratic presidential candidates, meanwhile, favor breaking up big tech like Facebook, Amazon and Google. And this could be the beginning of better being able to control the chaos to help stem the disinformation on social media, and specifically these disinformation campaigns, whether it comes from Russia, Iran, or Trump's little troll buddies.
All right, you know, we're going to take one last break here. I want to come back
again.
Yeah, one more break, and we're going to talk about. I want to talk about Baltimore and Elijah Cummings and this gigantic distraction that Trump has thrown into the debate. And that doesn't mean it's not valid. I'm just saying that the intention here with Donald Trump is to distract from the fact that Elijah Cummings is cleared to subpoena Jared and Ivanka's email records. And that's why.
That's part of the reason. Yeah. Racism's the other, but we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll get into it. I think it's all of the above, I think. One last break back after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska!
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Yes, it is. And this is a cover of Prince. I'm not the woman. And a project called, I always want to say Sexual Chocolate. I almost did this on the last after party before the vacation. It's Synthetic Chocolate. That's the name of this act. And this is I Would Die For You, of course, by Prince. They have a whole like Prince That's tribute cool. album. And in fact, they just released a new album, Synthetic Chocolate did, which is a series of songs inspired by Prince, but not literally Prince covers. So looking forward to that one, too.
Very
yeah.
Synthetic Chocolate, very
Synthetic
good.
Synthetic Chocolate. Yeah.
Sexual Chocolate, also very good.
You see, that is from the Eddie Murphy film Coming to America. That was one of the best. That, see, now I remember that buzz, but I don't remember most of what I did last week. So
I can explain that.
But yeah.
By the way, studio looks great. You got rid of the rats?
Shit. Yeah, this stupid fucking thing. Obviously, Donald
Trump. That sums it up right there.
Yeah, exactly. Donald Trump. Playing the race card again. Donald Trump using the tried and true Republican Southern strategy, securing votes by dividing people racially. And that's exactly what he's doing here. Benefit to, he gets to distract from the fact that Elijah Cummings now can get Jared and Ivanka's emails, showing that they're doing all kinds of dubious shit with their emails, including using...
Oh, it's not just, and it's not just that. I mean, it's the other stuff. It's he's afraid of Elijah Cummings at this point.
Yeah, because, and he should be.
Cummings has the power. Cummings, made Trump and his Homeland Secretary look terrible by tearing into McAleenan at a hearing last week, talking about children sitting in their own feces in detention facilities. I think that hurt Trump a little bit personally. Mm-hmm. It's about time. Don't you think?
I know.
But it's the fear that Elijah Cummings is closing in with his various investigations of Trump corruption. And he really feels that noose tightening at this point, which is why lashing out. So it's a two-purpose thing that he's doing here against, again, the advice of his advisors. He thinks this is drumming up votes in his base, and there's evidence that it really, really is. He also, like you said, this serves hopefully as a distraction from all the various things that are closing in on him, including the possible testimony of Don McGahn this week.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Trump, I believe, doesn't even know the difference between Elijah Cummings and John Lewis. I think he thinks they're the same person, and he doesn't know, and I think that's where he starts.
Whoever they are, they're both mean to me.
They're both mean, exactly right. They both say mean and unfair things to me. Wah, wah, wah.
Stop whining. Okay,
thank you. And so he doesn't know anything about the Maryland 7th either, and anyone who knows anything about that congressional district represented by Elijah Cummings in Congress knows that it's a weirdly and admittedly gerrymandered district that looks like a giant figure eight, where only a teeny tiny portion of it overlaps with, I think it's Northwest Baltimore. The whole rest of that goddamn congressional district is rural, farmland, suburbs. I mean, just a slice of Americana that we are all familiar with. You know, wealthier areas, poorer areas. Basically, any congressional district in America is indicative of this kind
of
thing.
Median income of 60 grand a year.
Yeah.
For a 40% white population in Cummings District. And yet Cummings is the man they have repeatedly elected to that office.
And by the way, Donald Trump is president of Baltimore, too. I mean, he's president of the United States, and that happens to include Baltimore.
Don't you think they have enough trouble already?
That's true. Absolutely
true. Do you have to give him that, too? Wouldn't they be better off without him?
I mean, you mentioned the median income in the Maryland 7th, $61,000 a year. The median household income in the United States, of which Donald Trump is the president, $59,000 a year. There we go. Thank you.
Now, Baltimore's lovely parts of it. As you know, you go to any town in America, and it's got beautiful parts and it's got dumpy parts.
Yeah,
And You know, we use that's usually where we stick the poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Cummings District, no different than your town or any other town.
Yeah.
But some really lovely. I love Baltimore, the Baltimore that I know, to the extent that I know it. It's just a wonderful, lovely, lovely, and historically important place.
Yeah, and of course you would know, speaking of history, that Baltimore is where, you know, Donald Trump's favorite Fort McHenry is located, which is mispronounced, well, it's Fort McHenry, but he said McHenry on the 4th of July. That's in Baltimore.
Bob, it's where they rammed the ramparts and took over the airports.
It was in Baltimore, all those colonial airports, you know, right, that Donald Trump claims we took over, right? Jared Kushner owns more than a dozen apartment complexes in Baltimore. Many of them have been cited for hundreds of code violations, and they provide substandard housing to lower income tenants. There's a rat problem, too, that
Kushner let's has see, they said maggots. mice and something else I don't remember that's bad.
Jesus Christ. Maggots. Yeah. Maggots. Yeah. Of
maggots
course.
Maggots and mice. Oh, my.
Maggots.
Doesn't it make sense? I mean, you look at Kushner, he's such a wimpy little guy. It figures he'd have mice instead of rats.
Yeah.
I mean, he seems more like a mouse guy than a rat guy.
He even kind of looks a bit like a mouse. Yeah. You ever notice
yes,
that?
Yes, exactly. That's where I got that, I think. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think so. Yeah. So you can obviously compare the Maryland 7th or any part of Baltimore with some
America?
Of the. Yeah, exactly. Well, or to places like Kentucky, which I think is 4th or 5th in poverty. Right. Mitch McConnell's Kentucky, Rand Paul's Kentucky.
That's a dump.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, so this is completely unfounded in reality. It was entertaining to be participating in all of this on Twitter when it was all going down, because the first thing I did was I went to Google Street View and just dropped the little yellow guy onto a bunch of streets in the Maryland 7th, it completely at random. And, you know, bucolic settings, lovely little neighborhoods with colonial homes and, you know, just the usual suburbia, your usual Americana. Yeah.
It has a little of everything, just like every other place in America.
And the response from some of the red hats was like, you went to Street View? I was like, wait a minute, this is Street View from the district you're talking about. What? And of course, it was a big rabbit hole of bullshit and nonsense. And so that was ultimately disintegrating the conversation. But the fact is, when you start a conversation based on bullshit, there's only one direction it
can
go.
One way it can go.
Yeah, exactly. So that's that. It's just, you know, it's just one of those things that, now it's got the press all asking Donald Trump about Baltimore. Wow. And does he really believe this about Baltimore? And are you a racist, Mr. Yeah. President? And of course, he's going to say no. And
most of this is noise, of course. The important thing is that the guy's a racist. I mean, you only have to look at his record to see that.
Yeah.
Everything he has said and done, contributes to that logical conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
I saw somebody on Twitter today saying, just because I support Trump doesn't make me a racist. Well, when you look at the things that Trump has said and done, if you support that, then yeah, you are.
Yeah.
You are a racist if you support these things. If you support the man and enable the man who does these things, then I'm sorry, but you are. And what worries me here about this string of racial attacks that are, you know, callously done for political purposes on Trump's part, and as you said, to distract from the investigations closing in on him. What bothers me most about it is how it inflames the people. We don't know yet to what extent his remarks have had on past domestic terror, including the shooting over the weekend at the food festival in California from a guy who apparently had begun to lean white supremacist.
Yeah.
I'm worried about Trump's people. Now, I feel like, and this is sum up my feeling for the show, I think, and for the day and for the week, and that is that I feel like we got this Trump thing as far as Trump goes. I think it's going to take a time. It's going to be a lot of bullshit, but we're going to have to go through it. But I think we can get Trump. I think in the long run, we're going to, and maybe even in the shorter run, we're going to get Trump. So I feel like that's pretty much taken care of, or will be. At least I'm sure that it will be taken care of, whereas I wasn't before. So that's good.
Yeah.
What concerns me is Trump's people.
Yeah.
Not only have we seen him fire up this racism, we've seen him fire up people. The people who've got wrong ideas and who are misinformed. And even once Trump is gone, we have to deal with those people, and I'm not looking forward to it.
No, no. And again, it's another perfect illustration of how everything Donald Trump does is for political effect, and that political effect is to protect Donald Trump's fat ass. That is entirely how he's making all these decisions. And a lot of this, too, oh, yeah, you know what? I almost entirely forgot to mention that one of the things Donald Trump was watching right before he tweeted about Elijah Cummings in the Maryland 7th was a report on Fox and Friends.
Fox and Friends.
Fox and
Friends. He was watching Fox, and then he did something terrible?
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
It's amazing. Shocker. I know. It's amazing breaking news here at the end of the show.
How do we shut them down?
Yeah. You know what? I was literally drifting off to sleep last night going, how do you get rid of Fox News? I guess if they lose all their advertisers and they no longer have ratings, they're going to have to change their formats. I mean, we've both been in radio buzz. We know that that tends to happen sometimes. It's just a matter of how do you get
them? They got me off the air.
How do you get to? Yeah. I mean, here we are in our bedrooms talking on a podcast because of that sort of thing.
I hate to say this because I have people in this, but a lot of the viewers are going to die because most of their audience is over 65.
Yeah.
So slowly, painfully slowly, people will stop watching. Advertisers will stop buying, and slowly it will change or go away.
Yep, I have got my fingers crossed. I'm hoping that that will happen. I'm hoping the same will happen for Trumpism. I tweeted this the other day. I said, you know, my best case scenario is that the entire Trump family has to go into hiding after the 2020 election. That is the ultimate thing. There are going to be lines. You're going to have to wait in line to piss on Donald Trump's grave. That's what's going to happen.
Well, we've got the perfect facilities for it. They'll be empty by the time the next president is sworn in.
There you go. Buzz Burbank News and Comment. You can find it at buzzburbank.com, also at realmnetwork.com, and wherever you get your podcasts, including, I don't know what the hell's happening with Apple Podcasts, but something's fishy with iTunes right now. And I know it's in the transition over to becoming Apple Podcasts, but
just try really, really hard to find our shows, please.
Yes, go to Google and Google it. That's all you got to do. I mean, you're already listening to me, so why don't you do something like a search engine? That'll help you. Meanwhile, Sexy Liberal Podcast Network at sexyliberal.com. Jody Hamilton's From the Bunker Podcast. Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour. Randy Rhoads' After Hours now on Free Speech TV. So much more. Dean Obidala's I Want to Be Your Muslim Friend. Sanity with John Fugelsang. And this show. Take care, folks. See you on the Postmortem Show. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed that podcast, I hope you'll check out my podcast, I Want to Be Your Muslim Friend, with me, Dean Obidala, because I want to be your MBFF each week, where I'm going to make you laugh while making you smarter, right here on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network.